Pro Savings Days are on at Lowe's. Get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, My Lowe's Pro Rewards members get an additional 5% off when you buy 5 or more select GE, Whirlpool, and Electrolux kitchen or laundry major appliances. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 123. Discount valid to My Lowe's Pro Rewards members only. Exclusions and other restrictions apply. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See associate or Lowe's.com for details. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Today, we are sitting down to talk with Mrs. Barbara Masoner of Chattanooga, Tennessee, and formerly of Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. When I say we are sitting down to talk, I mean that we are doing this podcast interview very differently from any of the others. It's a first on location. We are in Mrs. Masoner's home, and we are face to face. You have lived in three different places, haven't you?
One more. We've also lived in Los Angeles.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, and that was most 11 years ago.
Okay.
We moved back here.
All right. So you were in Chattanooga, then you went to Los Angeles.
Yes,
and
we had
back
children here.
Well, okay. We are joined by our mutual friend, Mary Sheets. Who has introduced me to Barbara Masoner through her daughter, Hannah. Mrs. Barbara Masoner has a long and rich story to tell, and since the focus of this podcast is creativity and our use of God's gifts of creativity, I will start by saying that Barbara is a portrait artist, and there are some of her works in her home, and they are beautiful, to say the least. There is a downside to interviewing a visual artist on a podcast because we can't show any of their work, but she's given me permission to post it on my website. So there will be a post to my blog there and links to this discussion as well. Another aspect of her life, a large aspect, has been a Christian ministry, which is often overlooked as a place of using creativity. And we will get into that as well. So, Barbara, tell us how you became introduced to visual arts and knew of your talents.
I think I knew pretty early that I loved to draw. It was a way. I was kind of a lonely oldest child. We lived in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I was really introduced to art through the Carnegie Museum of Art, which is right down the street. And in my grandmother's home, where we lived for a time, and I had an uncle, Bill Nye, and an EY in near Philadelphia in a little town. You know this story about them?
No. It's funny that you spelled his name, and not to confuse with the other fellow.
Right. He was, it's near Philadelphia in New Hope, Pennsylvania, which was an all, is still a small artist kind of colony. And I would draw cartoon characters. Do you remember the cartoon Brenda Starr?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Well, I like Brenda Starr because she was a realist. She was a real person, not a, you know, an artificial person. And I would send them, mail them to Uncle Bill. This was probably during war and after. And he had been taught very academically and rejected it. And he was a very strict abstractionist. So when he needed money, he built brick walls in New Hope. But he took me seriously, and he'd make little comments on my drawings. Said the bat, you know, it was tremendously encouraging.
Well, right. So you came from a family that had artists in it.
Yes. Okay. And it had art on the walls and the museum. I was in the museum, you know, probably weekly.
Okay. Was there anything in the Carnegie Museum that was really impactful for you?
Honestly, the whole thing.
Okay.
It was a part natural history that led right in to the fine arts.
Oh.
But I was attracted to realism, Manet and before John Singer Sargent, I noticed then.
Mm-hmm.
I, of course, had him in mind when I did this big portrait, which made me online.
Okay. It's interesting. I don't want to get off on my own thoughts, but this morning I was reading Psalm 143, I believe, and there's a verse in there, I think it's number 5, about musing. I muse on your work.
I read that this morning.
Oh, how interesting. And so I was kind of camping on that, and I thought, you know, musing and museum probably in the original languages had nothing to do with each other. But in English, they do, because, you know, when you go to a museum, you should muse.
That's one of the points.
You know, I thought that was interesting. And I thought about the essence of art for a Christian is really to muse on the works of God's hands.
Yes.
In a sense.
Yeah.
I just really thought that was an interesting connection.
Well, somehow I put that connection together too. And thinking about how I've come to see myself as creative, I wouldn't have used that word necessarily in the past. And I've always been uncomfortable with the term artist, especially if I'm not presently drawing or painting, which I'm not now. I don't like to call myself an artist. But you're questioning about creativity and what is creative is very helpful.
Yeah. Yes, you know, it took me a long time to identify myself as a novelist. It took years, and I don't know why.
No matter how many plays or stories.
Yeah, I don't know why. I think it may be my academic training, where you know, you study the greats, and so they're the novelists, they're the writers, and you think, well, I'm not in that category, so I really can't call myself this, and I don't make my living by it either, which most writers I know do not make their living by it, so very few that do, so by their colon living, so, and I imagine it's true with artists, but that doesn't, in both cases, it doesn't really, it doesn't matter whether, you know, if you're doing it, you're doing it.
It's sort of the way we're wired, I think, since the fall of man. We still have this desire for perfection. And we know we're not it. But that's how we're wired. So we don't accept really the gifts that he's given us well.
Yeah. Yes. That is a whole different angle we could go on.
Yes.
Of how we are so slow to accept the gifts, whatever they are.
Yeah.
Is it from pride? I think it's from pride. A lot of times. Not always, but a lot of times. So that's interesting about your childhood and having such a rich environment with the art. So did you get to study art formally, as you were child and into adulthood?
Yes and no. I was always drawing, and Uncle Bill was there. There was a program that Carnegie Mellon offered to students. I think it was 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. One student each could go every Saturday morning during the entire school year taught. And I desperately wanted to do it. But there was a boy. And at that point in time, boys were considered breadwinners. And he went all those years, and I didn't get to go.
Is this sort of immediately post-war?
Yes.
Yeah, World War II. Yeah. And yeah, that was a man's world. I mean, they had just been through a lot.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, before things had happened in the 60s. But still, it's for you, it was unfortunate. And do you think he used to, do you ever follow up on him?
I never did.
Yeah.
But I did get some help, but I had a young man who was a little older encourage me. And I just reconnected with him last year. And he encouraged me to go to Carnegie Mellon and meet the dean. I was in a Catholic school, 12 years of Catholic schooling. And very few people in this little Catholic school went to college. And it was like Christmas. And he said, you know, you should think about college. And I said, well, I don't want to take a man's, you know, boy's place. And he said, no, that's no longer necessary. Go and meet the dean.
Mm-hmm.
So this was like December, January. I went and met the dean, Rice, at Trinity Mellon, and he was wonderful. And I showed him a few things, and he said, well, I can't make any decisions because I'm not seeing enough of what you can do. So go home, start drawing, get a big sketchbook and start drawing and come back to me in a month. And he said, if your family knows anybody on the board of education, on the board of Carnegie Mellon, he said, you go in and you make an appointment with that person, you dress up, and you make an appointment and you ask them to write a letter for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I did all those things. And I got a scholarship.
Okay.
I did not last the full length of time, but I learned a lot. So I really did have some very good education. A drawing class before we began as freshmen was the best,
mm-hmm.
because we were taught to use our eyes in a way that I hadn't understood, making relationships between angles and things like that. But it was very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Getting down to the real basics of line and shape and all that.
Yeah.
That people take for granted. It's like so many things that people think. I work with a lot of writers who are, and they don't, who are trying to get published, et cetera. And sometimes they don't want to do the work of just knowing the grammar, knowing the sentence structure, knowing the words. And they also, you know, they don't want to get looking the best.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to read. I want to write, but I don't want to read. No. It would be like saying, I'm not going to go to a museum.
Exactly.
To look at the grades. And know what
they
did.
Don't believe they even teach how to diagram sentences anymore.
Not generally, no. Yeah. So
I know you did, Mary.
Yeah, we did it. You know, but 60s.
No, it's like in the cop.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, you were in a progressive state.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah. I was in a still old timey, I think. But we did some of that, but not as much as we should have. I learned most of my grammar from taking Spanish, so which is kind of interesting. Uh-huh. You have to know that, and which is another thing. That's part of your story as an artist, but I know that another part of your story is about your faith. So would you like to share as much as you feel like you should about that?
Thank you. I thought I was a Christian as a Catholic,
mm-hmm.
until I got to Carnegie Mellon. And then I heard all kinds of perspectives that I was not prepared to even begin to try to defend. I just didn't know scripture.
Yeah.
So really, I fell from the faith that I had for a good, bad 10 years.
Can I ask, do you feel that you weren't, even in the Catholic doctrine and traditions, do you not feel like you were really grounded in that either?
I think I was, but I didn't know how to talk with people whose perspective were so tremendously self-centered as opposed to Christ-centered. I knew that was the truth. And after I came to faith, going through a divorce in my late 20s, it was sort of a Jesus movement time in the late 60s. And I was in Al-Anon, which is partner group to AA. And a girl started a Bible study. And she asked me to come. And I was getting counseling. And I said, oh, no, I don't do that kind of thing. And she said, well, won't you please come? My analysis is going to start, but I have to have a certain number of people. So I could walk, and I went, and they didn't need me. There were 25 young mothers, wives there, and me. And I came to faith through that.
Mm.
And so I just was on fire. The scripture that really drew me is, of course, the Romans 12. I beseech you, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you would know what God wants you to do. The third verse, the Lord gave me a song for once. For I say, through the grace given to me, to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. And that has really continued to draw me to him. So I have been, since then, what some of my family and others have rightfully called obnoxious Christianity.
I'm sure that's a matter of opinion.
Well, perspective. I wasn't as sensitive as I, but the Lord is more real to me now. And I've integrated that with art right from the beginning, because I was trained at Carnegie Mellon that your gift came first. Your gift of whatever it was, artistically, creatively, the music school, architecture, theater, were all in one bill. And we were all trained that that came before any relationship.
Well, no.
So when I came to faith, then Christ was the bigger reality. I knew, no, that can't be true. And I thought, oh, I'm going to have to draw a cheesy Sunday school art. And of course, there's Sunday school art that's not cheesy, but anyway, I didn't have to do anything except what the Lord led me to.
That is so profound, because some other people I have talked to who are devout Christians who are using their art specifically in filmmaking, you know, Christian films are notoriously bad, and they are, but they're a good group of people, friends of mine, who are trying to change that, you know, to make films that are not cheesy, that are engaging and well-written and not cheesy, I should say, you know, and good production values and things like that. So, but that tension is so real, I think, to anybody who wants to do art, who is also wanting to serve God. You know, where does one start and where does one make pen? It doesn't. It just, it's together. You know, it is your gift and you can use them both, but it's a hard thing for some folks. Yeah. The Christian artist versus, or the Christian writer or the Christian filmmaker versus someone who is that, trying to give it to God and but do it as completely well as can be done. Yeah.
First, from being in LA for 7 or 8 years, we went with a church there. And we met a lot of people, you know, working at that as well. Wasn't there? They're so good.
As far as your move from Pittsburgh down to Tuscaloosa, which is, I always thought that was a funny name, because it was like it was a tusk and they had the elephant. I don't know if that was supposed to be some connection.
It's an Indian thing.
Oh, is it? Okay. Okay. I saw that. It must have something to do with the elephant, the Roll Tide and all that. So
you say that is a good Tennessee.
Yes. I've actually never been to their campus, and I've been to a lot of campuses too. So how did you end up in Tuscaloosa?
Well, we were in the Pocono Mountains at a community college before.
Oh.
And Dave got a position as a professor of higher education at the University of Alabama School of Ed. And we were there for 21 years.
Ooh.
I became active as a portrait artist. We had a fifth child. And I started just drawing with a group of women when my youngest child was in kindergarten. And that led to some of us began an art alliance there that we had shows, and Tuscaloosa was a small enough town that you could be a big fish in a small place. And so I learned how to engage the newspapers and We got things written up as much as we could.
Yeah, that was at that time the main way for publicity. Now everything's digital, internet.
So different.
Yeah.
Listeners, I love doing this podcast. I hope deeply that you also enjoy listening. As we bring this content free of charge, I have some requests that will help it continue. We have exceeded 2,000 listens for the 24 yes and 30 episodes. That doesn't include the YouTube listens. And none of it would have happened without Clemencia Villafuerte, our producer. I have to say that I depend on her a great deal. In some ways, that number's great because I don't do much advertising or promotion. I depend on listeners to repost on social media and for the guests to post the links on their websites. On the other hand, it's really pretty low, as the podcast world goes. Really, really low. So I can't monetize it, at least not yet. That's good and bad. You all don't have to listen to random commercials about who knows what. Yay! And I don't have any financial help. Boo. So here are the asks, as the trendy people say now. I'm not sure what was wrong with the word requests, but number one, keep telling folks about this podcast. Even if it's just one that you particularly cared for, tell them about that one and they might get interested in the others. Of course, keep listening. Third, and here's the commercial part. Buy my books to offset the costs of the podcast. I don't talk about them much because I'm really terrible at marketing. I have several novels available on Amazon. You can look them up under Barbara G. Tucker or Barbara Graham Tucker, as in Graham Cracker, rolling my eyes, or you can ask me for signed copies. The most recent, Sudden Future by Colorful Crow Publishing, would make a great Christmas gift for a reader of any age. I will have another coming out before Christmas, Long Lost Justice. Others are Bringing Abundance Back, which I call the Southern Chick Lit book, Long Lost Family, a not so cozy mystery, Long Lost Promise, even less cozy. I haven't figured out how murders can be cozy. And The Unexpected Christmas Visitors, a story about refugees. All are on Kindle, too. Also, I have short Bible studies. I'm not at the GoFundMe point yet. Finally, buy the books of the folks I've interviewed here, or will. Luke Manjay of Ginseng Diggers, Becky Woolley, Ray Atkins, Kami Ballantyne, Devereaux Shivington Stebbins, Susan Kirkland, Renee Winchester, Carly Land, David Cady, Millicent Flake, Noah Knox Marshall, and Amber Nagel. You are a person interested in the artistic community of Chattanooga, Northwest Georgia, and beyond. Help them out. Thank you for listening to this commercial.
Okay, so let's get into this portrait artist subject, because how did you settle on that as your, I don't want to call it specialty, but as your...
Well, Brenda Starr was in my head, and I was drawing people that would come to Granny's house. Sometimes I just, as a child, I would sit on the floor and then just draw. So I always loved...
Let me stop here. Did they like that?
They didn't really know.
Okay.
And that's the way I prefer it.
Yeah,
I could see they were.
So you were doing...
drawings weren't
good. Oh, okay. You were doing it as a subterfuge in a sense. Yes. I need to explain about Brenda Starr. She was in the old Sunday comics. I don't know if she was in the daily comics, but she was a young career girl, redheaded, very... pretty, I'll just leave it at that. and she was always getting into adventures as a single woman.
I think she was.
Oh, she, yes, yes. Okay, that's right. And she would get into various soap opera kind of adventures. But
the drawings were realistic.
And yes.
The figure.
They weren't like peanuts or something.
No. So I hadn't really done much drawing until before college. But I loved doing people. And I found that portraits were still very popular in the South. I began to get some more training. My post-college training was wonderful. One of the best portrait painters in the country was from Tuscaloosa. Young man. Went to the North Carolina School for the Arts, I think, and was trained as an abstract expressionist. But after that, he went to Italy and was trained.
And he they know something about that kind
yes,
of thing.
Yes, they did. And Evan Wilson is his name.
Oh.
He is a fantastic artist to look at. He grows peonies and other things. And he was my teacher that really learned a lot.
Okay. Did he have like a school?
He just came back home to Tuscaloosa for a while. And ladies were wanting to take classes, and I found out about it. I wasn't part of that other ladies group, but he moved to New York shortly afterwards. And there was a painting I had of a model who ended up being his wife.
Oh.
I did her portrait. Somehow, I think in this move, she didn't make it.
How do you think portraiture then compares to other types of realistic art?
I think it's a good practice as far as learning to see. Portraiture requires some pretty strong studying and making judgments of relationships on a face or body.
Mm-hmm.
And I use portraiture as a way I can more easily make money to keep on affording material. I love to do landscapes and still lifes and that kind of thing. And they weren't judged as harshly as a portrait.
Mm-hmm. You probably somebody's face.
John Singer Sargent, who's impacted all portrait painters since, he said portrait is a painting with something a little wrong around now.
Huh.
That was his definition.
Portrait is a painting with something wrong around now. Wait,
because people will always find something a little wrong.
Okay.
Oh, I think her eyes are a little further apart.
Okay.
Or don't you see those ears are crooked? You know, there's always some, and I was taught never to draw or paint from a photo.
Mm-hmm.
So when I would do portraits for people, I would go and spend a couple of hours with them. And I would take five or six rolls of film in before the digital. And I would choose the, you know, maybe a couple of perspectives they could pick from. I never show the photographs.
Okay. Okay. So would someone come and sit for you for a long period of time like we typically
sometimes. Sometimes they couldn't or wouldn't. And then I would go to them and take rolls of film and then, you know, just send them or go and see how it's this looking so far. When you do this large portrait, I'm always asked, how long did it take? And she was a PhD candidate in environmental biology, but she was a waitress and a redhead, like Brenda Starr.
Of course.
And I asked her if I'd pay her if she'd come and model, and she was still finishing her degree. So she said, fine. We put the costume together through the theater department, university.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it looks like something in the 19th century. Is that what you were going for?
I was going for Sargent-esque.
Oh, okay. Okay. Late 19th century, yeah.
The group that represented me were Portrait Brokers of America, or Portrait South, and they wanted me to do a big showy portrait that they would give their reps. Otherwise, I was borrowing paintings back from people in the family and that sort of thing. So she posed, and they took it. And then I got sick and wasn't able to do portraits or anything anymore. Mm-hmm. So I got it back and she and her husband to be the preliminary drawings.
Okay. So would people just come to you and ask, to you to do their portrait?
I had flyers that gave my fees.
Mm-hmm.
And it was largely friends that, would commission me at first. But I did pretty well for about 10 years.
Okay. Yes, it's just I've always wondered about people who would get their portrait done. It's not just the money. It's, where is it a photographic world? What do you think having a portrait painted of yourself is? What is the meaning of that? Why do people do it?
Probably for the same reason they do a photograph.
Mm-hmm.
Well, although something that is painterly, may be more expressive than some creative photographs.
Mm-hmm.
But corporations, hospitals, they still seem to want painterly portraits.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily imaginative ones like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it means it would be a compliment in the family.
Mm-hmm.
Like a do your mother or something like that.
It's like a gift, yeah.
Here, people like to have portraits of their children. I'll see portraits of artists that I knew from here in Chattanooga in different people's homes.
Mm-hmm.
Their children will make one grow.
Yeah, it seems to me that it would be, you'd have the gift, the perspective, the talent of the artist that you obviously admire. You can get something to do with it that you don't admire. And you get to see yourself through different eyes. Because the camera is not always objective, but we tend to think of the camera as objective. Yeah, there's more to it than that. But
let me just interject. I never had a portrait of somebody who wanted me to do them.
Mm-hmm.
It was always somebody else on the family.
Okay.
Or a corporation.
Okay. Yes. And that makes sense because it would be, maybe this isn't the right word, but a little narcissistic to have somebody.
It could be.
Yes. Okay. So
I can think of some people I'd love to have ask me if they sure do me.
Yeah. So what do you think was your most exciting commission that?
Most exciting. Positive and negative, was a commission of a mother and two children. I knew the woman well. We were very close. She had been a divorcee and had remarried. We had that in common. We were in Bible study together. And her husband commissioned this portrait, and his stepson and his birth son. A couple of years difference in their ages. And I submitted a drawing or a small painting of the final painting.
Mm-hmm.
And it was considered like a full length of all three or three quarter. I can't remember, but it was a big painting. And she was an influential woman. And I was hoping others would see. And when they came to the studio to see it finally, the husband did not like it. He felt the older child had a negative expression of sarcasm or something. And he was not that kind of child to begin with. And I didn't feel that that's what I saw. And I was sorry. And I asked them if they... I said that you don't have to take it. I hadn't taken the deposit or anything because I knew that. I said that if you don't want it, that's fine, but then it's not. And then I will show it.
Mm.
And so they left. They came back maybe the next day. And he said, no, we'll buy it. We're buying it. and they have it. It was there the last time I looked.
Okay.
And they come to love it, but it was a real shock.
Ah.
And the son grew up to be just a marvelous, wonderful husband and father himself, close to his stepfather. So there was a lot that was resolved.
So they were seeing something, or the man was seeing something that, you know, really wasn't there in the scene.
Like,
yeah. Okay. That's fascinating. So if you had the, you know, this is a question I often ask in the podcast is what does the word creativity mean to you in your experience?
Well, this was the most helpful question that you gave me. And I was thinking that since as a believer, I understand that we're created in the image of our Creator and a perfectly loving God. And so that each of us has some creative capacity. I didn't always get that connection. I thought, quote, I had a gift, but I had a gift because I had a Creator. But in my late 20s, coming to faith, I read a lot of Francis and Edith Schaeffer works. And there was a Dr. Rookmacher.
Oh, yes, yes.
On a art in the Bible.
Right.
It's not in print anymore.
Mm.
But that was very helpful. And a lot of things that people that they led me to. And it was very encouraging. But some people seem to have an inventive kind of creativity, like your friend Michael Largent.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband is very creative. He thinks outside the box. And so we look to him in the family to take care of things that I couldn't. But mine, as I kind of have said, expressionism, conceptualism, impressionism, abstractionism. Each of those schools can be used creatively, even in realism. I'll borrow from some of that. But my kind of creativity is that I look and study relationships between objects or people, parts of people, scenery. And I'm constantly using my eyes to measure and see if something feels a little out. I like something a little, you know, I'll move things. I don't do that at other people's house.
Well, you probably want to do it at mine, but
right now. But I have had some good training after college, particularly that helped me grow in that kind of creativity so that I could better replicate what I saw. And I guess I saw that I was doing several things as a new believer, thinking about art in the Bible. I hadn't read the Bible much before. And I began to read the Bible, and I'd be sitting up in bed at 3 a.m. and I'd wake up with the Bible on my chest. And that began to inform, you know, my thinking as far as what creativity is.
It's interesting you bring up the isms, you know, the expressionism and all those kinds of things. And I got in this discussion with Michael Argent when we had that is, you know, I had seen some video that said that modern art was...
Oh, I remember you talking.
Yeah, and modern art was bad art because of the worldview or something, and this, you know, the art, and that was the fellow's argument. And Mike took issue with it, of course, because he is more, I guess the word is conceptual. Is that what you would say, Mary?
That's what you call it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's a photographer mostly, and he does graphic design, and he does do realistic just photographs of things, but he also does very different kinds of things with the photographic materials or sound that way, you know, that I confess I don't understand. You know, it's like I'm going to lend myself to the realism. Now, that's not to say that I don't go to a museum and get very moved by, especially Guernica, You know, I cried when I saw Buena Vista in Spain. It was, you know, it just was incredible. But I'd rather look at an Albert Rierstadt, you know, or Frederick Church, if we're going to talk about that, you know. So it's just, it's interesting that you try to bring some of those isms into the realism, you know, and
yeah, just a copy of something,
right?
There's not much life,
and yeah,
if you ask the other question was, what does the word creative mean? And I learned somehow early that as I attended to people as a little girl whose parents were divorced, living in my grandmother's home, I saw that being creative and attending to other people made people feel more comfortable than it helped me. I learned people that way. I watched people that way. And it helped me to enjoy my surroundings more. I will move things around here. I did something this morning, like, oh yeah, that's creativity. Mm-hmm. I just moved a pencil or something.
Mm-hmm.
But that's I learned that the way furniture is placed makes people more comfortable or less. Mm-hmm. The way things are put on a shelf, flowers in the vase, kind of lighting in the room, making a bed.
Mm-hmm.
Cooking, sewing, wearing clothes, using cosmetics, and structuring things around the home, and trying to be creative, even when I was a drawing or painting. Being aware of that creative, and this I felt was kind of the thesis of my own thinking based on your questions. To me, it means a cognitive connection involving myself and others, deliberately considering different things about them. And it's always an option to be creative,
mm-hmm.
or not. I imagine myself, and I'm older than both of you, and as even an older woman than I am now, I imagine myself bedridden or room-bound. And I can imagine just studying the folds in my sheets. And still, as long as my eyes were working, I'd be making those sorts of connections. As humans discovering the possibility of creativity and then learning to believe it, know that we're known by our creator, really released me artistically.
Fascinating. Is there anything I haven't asked you that you'd like to? And
we started a group. I started a group, I guess, with my husband's goodness in Tuscaloosa called Art the Artist, the Word, the World. A little laborious, but we were talking about worldview and art. And we had student artists and other professional artists or Christians in the group. And it was a dinner group that would meet in Tuscaloosa. And it was very helpful to all of us, because our worldview does come through whatever we're doing. And that's something that I feel very strongly about. I am not drawing and painting anymore, as I said, but my eyes are always working. And one of the things I learned that I didn't draw much after college until I came back to faith, where I remembered, oh, Jesus, yes, that was you in grade school. Yes. Now I know. And I saw that all those years, I was not drawing or painting, but my eye had never stopped making the judgment on relationships and what I was observing, and I had grown. As an artist, I was better when I started back, even though I hadn't done it for so long.
Okay, that's a very interesting thought. And if it's okay with you, we will end there.
Well, thank you so much for considering me.
Yes. Thank you for letting us visit in your home, Barbara, and talking to us about your life of art and creativity and faith in Jesus Christ. We have been talking to Mrs. Barbara Masoner of Chattanooga, a portrait artist and a great person to talk to. Thank you.